from Buck Studio at Wisconsin Public Radio. This is Zorba Pastor on Your Health. I'm Tom Clark with Family Doc Zorba Pastor, here to talk with you about what's new in healthy living, share some down-to-earth advice, and some great lifestyle tips to help you get the most out of life. If you have a question for Zorba, you can call us right now at 1-800-462-7413. Of course, along with your calls, some interesting topics, tell us, Zorba.
Kids in school, do we start it too early? Should we let our teenagers especially start school later? What will that mean for their education and their health?
Okay.
Interesting data. Depression. With Robin Williams' suicide recently, I think it's useful to talk about suicide. It's at one of the leading causes of death in America. There are a tremendous number of suicides. What do we do about it?
Yeah, good question. What's our recipe?
Pesto and butternut squash pizza. If you want a wonderful vegetarian pizza, stay tuned. You will like this.
Mm-hmm. Again, 800-462-7413. The number if you have a question for Zorba. To the phones now, Zorba, and a listener with us in Oklahoma City, Oklahoma. Hi.
Hi, Tom. Hi, Dr. Zorba. Thanks for taking my call.
You bet. How can we help?
Well, I'm calling you today about an uphill battle I've been fighting for a long time with acne.
Mm-hmm.
I've never had really bad, cystic acne or anything like that, but it's always just been the pesky kind of stuff. I first saw a dermatologist when I was 15 and did the typical treatments of antibiotics like tetracycline and all the topical stuff,
mm-hmm.
and eventually moved on to isotretinoin, Accutane.
Uh-huh.
And it was wonderful. I mean, there are minor side effects, but life was a peach. It was great.
Mm-hmm.
And then acne came back, and just the pesky stuff again. I eventually, went back to a different doctor and did Accutane again. It was actually Amnistine was the brand. And now 2 years later, the bumps are coming back. So what my question is this drug obviously is very notorious for all the controversy around it, GI disorders and depression and birth defects. I'm nervous about doing a third round if
it's not going
to help long term. And then my second question on top of that is maybe if I should consider an alternative route, like changing my diet or something holistic. I don't know.
Well, I wish that changing the diet would work. It has limited usefulness. Diet can have an effect. We always say teenagers get more acne because they're eating greasy foods and pizza.
Mm-hmm.
But a lot of kids who have really good diets also have bad acne. So diet is not necessarily a trigger. It may be for some. Certainly is useful. Following a good diet is always useful, and healthy. But it's probably not going to do the trick here. The questions about Accutane are really good questions because, first of all, we know Accutane causes birth defects if you take it when you're pregnant. That's mm-hmm. really, there's the birth, the birth defect issue. And in fact, the feds put warnings on it because the birth defects are very significant. And at one point, they thought about taking the drug off the market. But it's frankly the only drug that has this effect that works well. There are other drugs that are similar to this, but no drug really works as well as Accutane. So that's why it continues to be manufactured. It comes in specialized packages. You have to be educated before you take it. The doctor has to be educated. For instance, I used to write for Accutane periodically. I can't do it now unless I keep up a certain amount of continuing medical education for Accutane. A third round, it's not as if it's cumulative. It's that there's a risk. The risk of cholesterol issues, depression issues, the dry mouth, the dry skin. It's not a cumulative risk. It's just the same risk. So what I tell people is kind of look at risk as how am I going to look at other risks that I do? So do you do any sports?
What do you do?
Do you do anything that's risky?
I occasionally run or swim.
Swim. Do you ever ski or water ski or anything like that?
Yes, I do.
Uh-huh. So there's a risk involved, right?
Yeah.
You ski down the hill, there's a risk. Do you go mountain skiing in the mountains at all?
Yeah, a handful
of
times.
Yeah, water skiing. So, there's a risk water skiing. All of a sudden, you're going to hit something. You're going to fly over. You're going to hit a barrier if you're going over a jump. The ski is going to hit you in the head. It is risky, but we like it, so we engage in that risk. I think Accutane has a risk to it. You look at it. and you say, I'm willing to give it a try, I certainly would, and I would try another cycle to see if it would make a difference. Mm-hmm. The other thing to consider, of course, are different antibiotics that may have not worked. So what antibiotics have you been on for your acne?
I believe tetracycline was the only one that I used.
Okay, so I would look for other antibiotics. Erythromycin is an antibiotic that can be used. Sometimes sulfa drugs are used. Sometimes minocycline. You might want to go that route first because antibiotics, now they have a risk too, but the risk I think is less than the risk for Accutane.
Okay.
That's how I would look at it. I think diet is always good, but in your case, I don't think it's going to work. And once again, it's one of the risks we take in life to keep ourselves, in your case, to keep yourself healthy and looking good.
All right. Sounds good.
Thank you. Thanks for your call. Good luck. Let us know what happens.
Okay, I will. Thanks so much.
You're welcome.
Bye-bye. 1-800-462-7413 if you have a question for Zorba. 800-462-7413. 413. Next, Zorba, a listener in El Paso, Texas. Hi.
Hi.
What's up?
Basically, about 8 months ago, I started getting cramps in my hands and my feet. Hmm. It appeared all of a sudden. Some days it doesn't appear, and then some days it's really bad. In the hands, it's the fingers that get kind of like twisted with a lot of pain. Hmm. So I have to do some kind of exercise to try to diminish it. And then in the feet, the same thing happens in the toes. Sometimes it's so bad that it goes up to the calf muscle.
Mm-hmm. Are these cramps occur in the nighttime or in the daytime?
They can happen anytime.
Uh-huh. They keep you awake at night?
Sometimes the pain will wake me up.
Uh-huh. Okay.
Then I have to get up and walk around and try to ease out the muscle, because the muscle contracts, and I have to kind of get it loose again.
Okay, I've got some ideas. First of all, one of the things that you can do for cramps is you can look at the exercises that you're doing or not doing. So over-exercise will do it. Lack of exercise will do it. So one thing that I would think about is whether or not engaging in some sort of stretching exercises for these cramps would make a difference. And so one of the things we'll do is you go to our website, zorbapastor.org. I'll go to YouTube. I'll find some good exercises for you for leg cramps and for hand cramps. I'll connect that onto our website so you can look at them and do some exercises. And what I would do is twice a day for 5 to 10 minutes in the morning, I would do stretching exercises for your hands, for your arms if your arms are bothered, for your feet, lower feet especially, and the calf muscles to see if that will make a difference. And sometimes as we get older, if we're not using our muscles correctly, for some reason they spasm. And if young people rarely complain about cramps. They just rarely do. And it's probably because young people are up moving around all the time and actually exercising, even if they're not. If you look at young people that are moving around, they're just always in motion. And if you look at people that are older, they're not in motion very much at all. So I think the stretching can make a difference. The other thing is I would go and get some magnesium pills. Sometimes magnesium can make a difference. An easy way to get magnesium besides magnesium pills is milk of magnesia. Teaspoon in the morning, teaspoon in the evening is an excellent way to get a little extra magnesium in your body, and that can make a difference too. If you've got any trouble with constipation, go to a tablespoonful in the morning and a tablespoonful in the evening. But magnesium and cramps at our website, the exercises, I think that would be a way to approach it. So good luck to you.
Okay. Thanks a lot, Doctor.
You're welcome.
Thank you so much for the call. 800-462-7413 if you have a question for Zorba. And now, Zorba, the American Academy of Pediatrics would like us to change the school.
Right. Well, I certainly would be up for that. What time did you go to school when you were a kid?
Started with band and orchestra at 8 o'clock and started the academic stuff at 9.
At 9 o'clock. Well, the pediatricians are now saying a lot of schools are now starting classes at 8 o'clock. Some of them are starting at 7:45 or 7:30. And they're saying this is simply wrong. This is not a good time for kids in their sleep-wake cycle, especially for teenagers. And teenagers need 9 to 9.5 hours of sleep.
Yeah.
And when we go to sleep, as we get tired at night, what time do you get tired at night?
Now?
Yes.
Well, I don't know about 7, 7:30.
7 or 7:30. What time do you go to sleep, Tom? Do you go to sleep at 8:30 in the evening?
No, about 10 or 10:30.
10 or 10:30. When did you used to go to sleep 25 years ago?
25 years ago?
Yes.
My schedule hasn't changed.
How about 50 years ago? What time did you go to sleep 50 years ago?
My schedule hasn't changed.
How about 60 years ago?
Stop right there. I'm not going back any farther than that.
How about 70 years ago? But I used to stay up. I still stay up until 11:30, 12 o'clock. Yeah. I don't go to sleep before.
Well, you're a night person.
I'm a night person. Yeah. Well, you're a day person because you did a morning show. Teenagers are night owls because they do not release melatonin the way adults do. They have a different sleep.
Oh, so this is genetic?
Yeah, it is metabolic. When hormones start, you remember when your hormones started? You're smiling.
Those were troubled times.
It was the best of times.
And
it was the worst
of
times. Maybe that's what Dickens was really talking about.
Good,
the years of our discontent, right?
Anyway, back to our topic.
Those memories. But anyway, teenagers have a different time frame. And the melatonin does not get released the same way. It's based on the sun and the sky and when we go to sleep and so on. But it's also based on what teenagers do. And their melatonin is released later in the evening. So it's hard for them actually to get to sleep often before 10:30 or 11 o'clock at night. Teens do not go to sleep at 8 or 8:30 as senior citizens do because of melatonin. So their thought is that we should start the school day later, and it should go later in the afternoon. We're not talking about cutting off the school day, but having the school day. Their recommendation is think about starting school at 8:30 in the morning consistently around the country, and then it may go later in the evening. Now, the pushback is, well, what about sports? What about sports in the evening? That's going to be later in the evening. But the reality is we ought to think about when our teens learn and what's best for them. And starting the school day too early can be really problematic for a learning
team. That's more important than sports?
Well, I guess it depends on the community you're in, doesn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, in some climes, such as where we are, it's pretty really cold early in the morning, early in the morning.
Yeah, it's dark early.
Waiting for the school buses.
Keep going.
At
dark,
7 o'clock in the morning.
Early.
Yeah.
Picture this frigid Wisconsin and winter, and it's January, and you're out there waiting for the bus, and it's 25 below zero, and you're going to have to wait for the bus, and the bus is late.
And by 8 o'clock, all that's gone. 1-800.
I'm still back in my teenage years. I'm thinking back to when I was a teenager.
1-800-462-7413, toll free.
I have to tell you, I'm going to be going to my 50th high school reunion. It's going to be held next year.
Yeah.
I've been thinking about it. I've been contacting other people I haven't talked to in at least 50 years. You know, and I contacted one person, and I said, do you want to go to this reunion? And he said, why would you want to see those football players again?
Football.
And I said, because I'm kind of interested.
What did he have against football
players? Yeah, well, because we were the nerds and the geeks.
Oh.
He
was afraid of being beaten up.
50 years later, he's still thinking about it.
Hey, 800-462. Let's get back to the phones. A listener with us now in Madison, Wisconsin. Hi.
Hi, Tom. Hi, Zorba.
Hi.
How can we help?
I'm a regular blood donor, and most of the time it just goes smooth as silk. But every so often, I'll be sitting there and things are going fine, and the blood just stops coming.
Hmm.
And the Red Cross people, the phlebotomists, they say it's not a clot. Their best guess was some kind of vein spasm, and they said, try cutting down on the caffeine. So I've been experimenting, and it has no effect at all. I've been keeping track of, you know, am I feeling stressed that day? Am I on taking any meds, anything? Nothing seems to have any effect. So I thought I'd ask if maybe you have thoughts.
Well, I believe in the maxim that nothing makes sense in biology except by the light of evolution. So nothing makes sense in biology except by the light of evolution. So a very major way that we used to die back in the day, and we're talking about maybe 10 generations ago, was by exsanguination. In other words, it was by the fact that we may be cut, we may have been injured by a tree, injured by a knife, attacked by someone else, injured by a wolf or a bear. And the reality is when you're bleeding, the thing you want to do is stop the bleeding. Now, we moderns know that we stop the bleeding with a tourniquet, and I'm sure that they figured that out right away. But cloth years ago, go back 10 generations, it was expensive, and you didn't always have it around at the time that you were injured. So a spasm of your blood vessel was a way of protecting your body from losing blood. And you actually probably have that genetic predisposition, which allowed people in your clan back 5, 10, 15, 20 generations to survive.
You mean once you bleed a little bit, the body tells you to stop that bleeding?
Well, that is what's happening with her. Wow. They're putting a cannula, they're putting a needle and a cannula and plastic in the vein. And then after the blood goes for a while, the vein is saying, wait a minute. I'm starting to lose blood, and it's automatically going in a spasm. So what actually is happening is it's protecting your body. It's that in your case, because you want to give blood to the Red Cross, it's not what they want to have. And I don't know what you could possibly do. I don't know where caffeine would fit in with this. Caffeine does not cause blood spasm. And clearly, they're not sure what to do either. But basically, I think this is a protective mechanism. I don't think it's under conscious control. I don't think it's caused your stressed at all. How much blood do they get out? Do they get out half as much as they need, or when you're giving blood? And then is it still usable?
It varies a lot. I mean, well, most of the time they get the pint. And actually, one of my records is 7 minutes and 20 seconds for a pint.
Unbelievable.
So sometimes my veins are quite cooperative.
Well, I've got one suggestion that you might try. One of the things that opens up our arteries and veins is exercise. When we engage in aerobic exercise, we basically are improving the blood flow throughout our entire body.
I was afraid you would say that.
I just pushed a button, didn't I?
No. I was braced for it.
So that would be the thing that I would think about. I would think about some exercise just prior to that. And it might be just brisk walking around the block for 10 to 20 minutes prior to that. Just get your blood flowing. Go around the block wherever you're going to go. Two or three times, 10 minutes of exercise prior to giving blood might actually open up the veins, because basically that's what's going to happen when you're actually exercising. Enough exercise so you feel like you're sweating. That's what
so
I would
general
try.
Exercise and then right before the appointment.
Yeah, that's what I would do. Where do you give?
Okay.
You give blood at the same place every time?
No, there are different drives around. It's really great. You can, when you're in the mood, you can go to their website and find out what blood drive is going on right in your area for the next few weeks, or you might even go months.
Okay.
And make an appointment right then, or just most of them are just walk in.
Sure.
I encourage people. We really need people to donate, and it's easy.
It's always important to donate blood any time of the year. Keep up the good work and exercise for 10 minutes prior to that. Thanks for your call.
Thanks for your answer.
Yeah.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. 800-462-7413. And before we take a break, Zorba, let's take a quick email question from a listener, Jeff, in Ogden, Utah. He writes, "Dear Zorba, I will start by saying what a great show you have. I take what you say as my first opinion and my MD as my second opinion."
Oh, wow.
Wow, about that. My question, we have a friend who's having trouble with wheat products. She says that it is because the wheat here in the United States has been modified, well, not so overseas. Is that a reason? There seems to be a lot of gluten problems here. What about the decrease in nutrients in the grains here in the U.S.? Could that be a factor?
Well, I don't think there's any evidence that genetically modified foods, actually cause gluten intolerance. I don't think there's any evidence for that. But wheat is pretty much in everything. Now, true gluten intolerance, true celiac disease, is actually pretty uncommon. It's not that common. It's not rare, but it's not that common. But what has happened is, over a period of the last few years, a number of people have said, my irritable bowel syndrome is better when I don't have wheat products? Well, IBS, irritable bowel syndrome, is actually very common. And we don't know the cause of IBS. And a number of people say, you know, I feel better on a gluten-free diet, mm-hmm. and my IBS doesn't bother it. I've never been labeled as IBS, but I have a spastic bowel, and basically it doesn't bother me when I don't take wheat. So maybe the gluten intolerance is more common than we doctors have given, you know, have given used to it. As far as genetically modified wheat, I don't think there's any evidence to that at all. Maybe it's the case, but I've never seen it.
Have a healthy living question for Zorba? Post it to our Facebook page or send it along in an email to
Zorba@WPR.org.
Stick around. Our recipe is coming up next. More of your questions, of course. Our medical myth buster later on. Oh, and another interesting topic to talk over. All right here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health from PRI, Public Radio International. Tom Clark with Family Doc Zorba Pastor here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health. That toll-free number, 800-462-7413. Callers waiting, an open line for you at 1-800-462-7413. But Zorba, before our next call, we have your recipe.
Yes, pesto and butternut squash pizza.
Pesto and butternut squash pizza.
Okay, do you like pizza?
Yes.
Do you love pizza?
No, I like it.
Do you like squash?
No, not at all.
You don't like squash. Do you like pesto? Okay, so this recipe is not the recipe for you, but many people in the world like pesto.
Right.
I happen to love butternut squash. Mm-hmm. Oh, butternut squash soup I used to make, and I used to love it.
It seems
it
to me
delicious.
We have more squash recipes on this show than we really should
have. Oh, no, that is not correct. You mean we should go back to pork chops? Pork chops and beef stew.
Bingo.
Beef stew, that's right. Or maybe Hungarian goulash made with lard, which used to be a favorite recipe. I don't use it anymore. Okay, pesto and butternut squash pizza. So it's a wonderful vegetarian pizza. Start out with 6 1/4-inch thick sliced peeled butternut squash.
6 1/4-inch thick slices peeled butternut squash.
Okay, so you take a butternut squash. You know what they look like,
sure,
right?
Sure, yep. I do.
And then you peel it.
Yeah, okay.
Okay, and then you cut it into 1/4-inch thick slices. 2 teaspoons of sugar.
2 little tea sugar.
3/4 teaspoon of extra virgin olive oil.
3/4 little tea extra virgin olive oil.
Cooking spray.
Some cooking spray.
1/2 cup of shredded Gouda or Fontina cheese.
1/2 cup of shredded Gouda or Fontina cheese.
That's right, or Fontina cheese. 1 store-bought pizza dough.
1 store-bought. Pizza dough.
That's right. In other words, we're not going to make the dough here.
Got
we're going to actually buy it. You know where you buy it in the store?
Right there in the pizza dough place.
Yeah, that's right. In the pizza dough place. You got it. Excellent. You know something? You are going to become the serious shopper. You're going to be the surprise shopper. That'll be your new.
Right.
You'll be the surprise if I see you shopping, which is 1 red onion thinly sliced.
A red onion thinly sliced.
Medium tomato finely chopped.
Medium tomato finely chopped.
1/4 cup of dried oregano.
1/4 cup dried oregano.
1/4 cup of pesto.
1/4 cup pesto.
1/2 cup grated Romano or Parmesan cheese.
1/2 cup of grated Romano or Parmesan cheese.
Okay, are you ready, Tom?
I am ready.
Okay, preheat the oven to 400 degrees. You can do that, right?
I think.
Yes, you think that's it. When was the last time you put anything in your oven at home?
Oh, my goodness. Let's continue.
How can we do this show when there aren't two cooks?
Oh, it's easy.
It's easy. That's exactly it. Okay. Combine the squash, sugar, olive oil in a medium bowl. Place the squash mixture on a large baking sheet. Coat it with cooking spray. Bake at 400 for 20 minutes until the squash is tender. Increase the oven to 450. Now sprinkle the Gouda or Fontina cheese over the dough. Okay, you've got shredded Gouda and Fontina. You could use any cheese you want to. You could use Gruyere. You could use butter queso. One of my favorites, you could use mozzarella. Gouda and Fontina are great ideas. I always have three or four different kinds of cheeses in my refrigerator at all times because I like to open it up and decide on what cheese I'm going to eat. I love cheese. I live in Wisconsin. Cheese sometime during the day is an essential if you live in the state. Otherwise, they increase your taxes.
Cheese is good.
Yeah, cheese is good. They don't really increase your taxes.
No, I know.
Anyway, you want to leave a 1/2-inch border around the side. Okay, the cheese is there. Top with the squash mixture. The squash goes on top of the cheese. Red onions, tomatoes, and oregano. Okay, drop the pesto by a little level teaspoon into the mixture. You just drop it on the top. Bake at 450 for 20 minutes until lightly browned. If you don't have a pizza stone in your house and you bake pizza, go out and buy a pizza stone. They make a huge difference in the crust. The crust becomes crustier and more crackly, if you will. Then brush the pizza crust with olive oil when you're all done. Sprinkle the pizza with Romano and serve it hot. It is delicious. If you like squash, if you want a great vegetarian pizza, this is the pizza for you. I've been experimenting with pizza over the last couple of months to find a pizza that I like. You will like this.
And we can find this recipe on
the web. I finally have a chance to talk about our website, ZorbaPastor.org. We have photos. We have other recipes. We have great things for you to look at. And what's more, we have pictures of Tom, which you'll like to have. That's ZorbaPastor.org. And we are all over Facebook. Come visit our Facebook page. You'll love that too.
I don't recall giving you permission to put my picture on the web.
You haven't seen all the pictures, have you?
No, I haven't. Maybe I'll take a look. 1-800-462-7413. It's toll free, 800-462-7413. Back to the phones we go now, Zorba. A listener with us in Sturgeon Bay, Wisconsin. Hi.
Hi, how are you guys?
Fine. How can we help?
Well, my question is concerning whether or not it is okay to do workouts without shoes on, so working out barefoot. My mom's 56, I'm 24, and for the past 2 years we've been working out together 5 days a week for a half an hour to 45 minutes a day. And we do various DVD workouts, you know, like T25, we do yoga, Pilates, kind of whatever we can get our hands on. And right now we exercise in our garage, which is a cement floor, and then we roll out an area rug, and that's where we work out. And we kind of started working out barefoot because we started out working in the summer, and it's really hot, and it just feels a lot better to not have shoes on during this. So, however, recently I was doing a cardio workout, and I did put shoes on, and I ended up hurting my foot anyways. I think I was, like, landing on it incorrectly, like, repeatedly. So then I went back to going barefoot, and I told a coworker about this, and she's like, wow, that's really unsafe to not be wearing shoes and working out. So now I don't know what to do, because when I wore shoes, my foot actually did get hurt, and, you know, doing it barefoot just is easier for me.
First of all, so you and your mother work out together. How sweet is that?
I know. It's so nice. I don't know if I'd be able to do it by myself. So, yeah, we're a team and have to kind of push each other to do it sometimes, but we get it done. And,
you know, the team concept of working out is really great. It reminds me, I was in India with my daughter, Didi, who's a family doc in Seattle. And she brought, you mentioned the C25 workout. Is that what you were talking about?
Yeah, we just started that one.
Yeah, and so she had a C25 workup. She had it up on a video, and we're in Delhi, and there is something called Diwali when we're in Delhi. And Diwali, they set off fireworks all over the country and the city. And, in fact, there's all this smoke in the air. And we're in our little hotel room, and it's like a war zone going on because there are firecrackers all over continuously. And she put on the C25 workout. We're working out in our room because she said we have to do this before we get on on the night flight back to America, and I found I felt so much better on that flight. I didn't feel nearly as tired. So some of those workouts are great. Doing it as a team effort, dynamite. And you can work out barefoot all you want. Your shoes are not necessary. You'll figure it out. If you find out that your feet hurt, then put the shoes on. See if they're better. And if you find that you don't need it and it makes you work in your workout, you're fine. You know, shoes are not essential for a workout. Now, running barefoot outside, I think it's a different issue because there's stuff outside. You know, there are things that can actually bother your foot. People do it who run barefoot, but often they build up a callus on the bottom of their foot that protects them. But that always bothers me and worries me because, you know, it's outside. Inside, I think you're fine. Keep it up. It works for you.
All right. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. So your coworkers said, I just want to get back to that. They said, yeah. Oh, that's dangerous. So you go back to that coworker and you say, well, I spoke to Dr. Zorba and they said that was okay. Who did you find out it was dangerous from? I'd probably go back and just give them some extra information so they don't spread that misinformation about working out barefoot.
Well, I'm at work right now, so I'll go tell her.
There you go. There you go. Thank you so much for
your call.
Bye-bye. 1-800-462-7413 is our toll-free number, 800-462-7413. And now, Zorba, let's welcome a listener with us from Parsons, Kansas. Hi.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure. How can we help?
Well, several weeks ago, my husband was fitted with hearing aids. During our visit with the technician, I asked, should he wear them all the time? And she said, yes, since we've returned home, he wears the hearing aids at times when he recognizes that he is having difficulty hearing, particularly that's when watching TV.
Yeah, can I just ask, why doesn't he wear them all the time?
But he doesn't think he needs them. He can hear. He says he can hear just fine. He claims they don't bother him, but it does bother him because of the wind noise. And so when he's outside and around or when he's out bike riding, the wind bothers him. Uh-huh. I told him all he has to do is turn them off, but that hasn't been received very well.
It has not been received very well. How long have you guys been married?
Long enough.
There you go. A couple of things. And a couple of thoughts, because they really are important to wear. First of all, did you buy good hearing aids?
Yes, we think so.
Okay, so you bought good hearing
aids. Can I ask how much you paid?
$3,000 for the pick. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so you got good hearing aids.
Those are good.
Okay, so let me explain a little bit about sound, because we learn about sound as we begin to listen to it. In normal hearing, what we do is we hear sounds and we ignore them. So when we're going down the street, if I'm talking to somebody and there's cars going back and forth, my brain shuts off the cars going back and forth, but it monitors them and I listen to the person I'm talking to. And if all of a sudden one of the cars screeches to a stop, my brain says, hey, this is important. That car is screeching to the stop. And I've been monitoring it all along, but all of a sudden I pay attention to the car. So we pay attention to certain sounds, and we don't pay attention to other sounds. What's happening is if you wear your hearing aids all the time, you learn to ignore your unconsciously. It's conscious at first, but you learn to ignore those sounds that are not important. So I have a recommendation that you can give to your husband who you've been married to long enough. Honey, wear your hearing aids all the time. See what happens after 6 weeks for 2 months. And Tom can tell you how important that is.
Yeah, I have a hearing loss and wear hearing aids. And it's a tricky thing because some hearing aids work for some people and don't work for others. And some hearing aids are good for correcting, say, the wind situation. The most difficult thing for me, and I think a lot of people, is background noise. You're in a very crowded restaurant, and the hearing aids tend not to be able to distinguish the person you're talking with right across the table from all the noise that's coming. But there are hearing aids that can do a better job with that, too. So it's really hard. And it's sort of like you really have to spend a lot of money to get
And you have to spend, I mean, they spent a good amount of money on these hearing aids. So they've got the right hearing aids. It's working with the hearing aid counselor and continuing to learn. It's a learning process in your brain. So put it on, keep them in.
Well, and it sounds like to me that maybe it would be wise to go back to our technician.
100%. 100%.
And talk to her about his reluctance to wear them.
Yeah. Well, it's just like glasses. If you get your glasses
yeah.
and you can't read with your glasses, you go back and you say they're not a good fit. It's the same with hearing aids. As Tom said, one size does not fit all.
All right. That's helpful advice. Thank you.
Good luck. Let us know. And this is the time where you should put your foot down.
800-462-7413. It's toll free. 800-462-7413. And before the break, Zorba, time to hear from your favorite nitpickers and lingual backseat drivers, the Grammar Police. Something new every show. Today's infraction is handed out to us courtesy of a listener, Mark from Whitewater, Wisconsin. He writes, the Grammar Police have issued a bench warrant for Zorba's henchperson, Tom Clark.
Oh.
On a recent show, Tom suggested that listeners who believed that Zorba was right or wrong should write into the show. That phrasing leaves only the no opinion people out of the correspondence. The correct answer to the question, am I right or wrong, is yes.
Am I right or wrong? Yes.
The question,
how are we going to get anything done with those four?
On the question posed, yes. Of course, your arresting officer has no opinion.
Oh, no. The Grammar Police got me again.
So the answer is always maybe?
Yeah, that's the answer is always maybe.
Okay.
That's exactly
I guess
right.
You're off the hook in the future.
I don't know. I have no opinion.
If you'd like to offer up your opinion, the Grammar Police is always looking for new recruits. Just send your grievances along in an email to
Zorba@WPR.org or message us through Facebook.
We have another interesting topic to talk over. That's coming up next. More of your calls, of course, for Zorba, our medical myth buster, too. All right here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health from PRI, Public Radio International. Tom Clark with Family Doc Zorba Pastor here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health. That toll-free number is 800-462-7413. We have an open line for you. But before we get back to the phone, Zorba, the tragic suicide of Robin Williams gives us cause.
Absolutely, to talk about that. Awful suicide. Just terrible because, you know, we sort of felt like we knew him. He was an actor and you sort of thought you knew him because he has a certain persona. But I think this is a good example of how just because people have an outward appearance, you don't necessarily what's going on behind the screen.
Yeah, yeah.
You know,
inside stuff was going on.
Absolutely. And I had a perfect example the other day in my office, a young woman who came in who, you know, to all extents and purposes, she's a young adult. She looked to be completely fine. And she was so depressed. She was suicidal.
Yeah.
And but she came in looking for help. And that's really part of it. Robin Williams had depression. He had a drug abuse problem. He had an alcohol problem. And it was just a terrible
it's
situation.
It's more shocking when somebody who's funny
does yes.
this. Because you think mm-hmm. of this person as a mm-hmm. very
sure.
humorous,
sure.
funny person. I think maybe that it's more likely because they have to mask – how they really feel.
A lot of teenagers who would appear to be normal, they commit suicide. You don't know it. I had a patient of mine, went out to college, seemed to be normal, an athlete, an avid biker, exercised all the time. He was the prom king, went up to the top of, he was a freshman in the dorm, went up to the top of the dorm and, quote, fell off the dorm, the top of the dorm. So you don't really know.
A lot of suicides in our country.
There are more suicides than there are murders.
What should we do?
More suicides than murders. Well, first of all, recognize the most common causes of suicide are depression. Mm-hmm. Anxiety is in there, but depression is really number one. Alcohol problems and drug problems. If somebody has a problem, bring it up to them and say, you know, I think you're depressed. I think you need help. Sometimes it's just that little coaching that people will actually go and seek help. It's not unusual, certainly in my office, for somebody to come in either with somebody or I'll say, why are you here? And somebody will say, I'm depressed. Yeah. The treatment for depression is a third of the people are helped by drugs, a third of the people are helped by therapy, and a third of the people are helped by both. Yeah. And it makes a difference.
There's still a stigma. If I have a broken arm, I'll come and see you right away. If I'm depressed, I'm not
that's right.
as likely
there's a stigma.
To go to
why
the doctor
can't you
and
get,
say that.
Yeah, why can't you get over it by yourself? Well, that stigma should be taken away. Just like sexism and racism and ageism, people with mental illness should not have the same stigma. And that's probably part of the issue with suicide in this country. If you know somebody who needs help, encourage them to get help. If you need help, get some help. Because the reality is there are many suicides that can be prevented by simply approaching it the right way.
1-800-462-7413 is our toll-free number. That's 800-462-7413. Back to the phones now, Zorba, as we welcome a listener in Manitowoc, Wisconsin. Hi.
Hi. Thank you for this opportunity.
Sure. What's up?
My granddaughter, ever since she was old enough to sit up, has a strange sleep habit our family calls pounding. She will sit up and either sit on her legs or sit with her legs kind of V'd out in front of her, and she will rhythmically pound her head, her forehead up and down on the mattress very rhythmically. It tends to happen when she's going to sleep or coming out of sleep, although I've slept in the same room as her, and it can take place any time during the night. Our daughter asked the pediatrician back when our granddaughter was much younger, you know, about this, and he seemed to think it was, you know, sometimes kids have different things they do as a comfort, and he didn't seem concerned, but now that she's getting so much older and she realizes she does it, and she doesn't seem to want to do it. She wishes she didn't do it.
Sure. So, it's become a habit issue. I have a couple suggestions. First of all, I don't think she has a tick. I mean, a tick is something you don't have control over. I agree with the pediatrician that there's some comfort that she had initially with that. Just like kids will suck their thumb, they'll go into ritualized behaviors. And adults do that too. You know, when you get ready for bed, is there a certain way you get ready for bed? Set up the room, or do you just plop into bed? What do you do when you go to bed?
Oh, yeah, I see what you're saying. Yeah, read a book for a little while. Mm-hmm. Yep.
So one of the things that tends to be significant with this is there's something that you're doing before bed that you want to substitute. And I would recommend reading to her. That's the main thing that I would do, because reading a story will often comfort children. And so you go with her to a bookstore and you pick out a couple of books that you think she will like, and she picks out a couple of books, and you change the ritual of sleep. So before you go to sleep, and this is the same with the parents, you go upstairs, brush her teeth with her, maybe comb her hair, relax her, pat her down, maybe scratch her back, develop a different ritual. And say, this ritual, we're going to do this instead of head pounding. And if you don't pound your head, we will do this every night. And then you put it, and then she's in bed, and then you read her a story. And when you read her a story, it may take 10 or 15 minutes. She'll probably go to sleep. She might ask for a second story, but as long as she doesn't pound her head, she gets a story. That's how you do it. You want to do it with a carrot, not a stick. And if she gets up in the middle of the night and she pounds her head again, then she doesn't get a story the next night. But if she doesn't pound her head, she gets a story the next night because kids love to be read to. Adults, do you, I kind of like to be read to sometimes. Do you like to be read to,
Tom?
Well, children, but Tom is far away from being a child. Children, on the whole, like to be read to. They like their imagination. They like to do that. So that's what I would recommend. Substitute the ritual.
Okay, so this is actually something you feel that she can behaviorally change.
Absolutely. I think you're in the 90 to 95% range. If that fails, what I would do is I would go to a clinical psychologist. That's what I would do. She doesn't need a neurologist. This is a behavioral issue, and it's a matter of getting her out of the behavior. But often we do that by substituting another pleasurable behavior. So when she thinks about hitting her head, she goes, well, then I don't get a story. And you begin to do it in a Pavlovian way.
Okay.
Okay.
Great. Thank
Call
you.
Us yeah. back and let us know, okay?
I will do that.
Good luck. Pick out those books.
Thank you.
Sure. Thank you so much for the call at 800-462-7413. And time now, Zorba, for our Medical Mythbusters segment. Today's question comes to us from Douglas, who's listening in Kenosha, Wisconsin. He writes, "Hello, Dr. Zorba. I have a silly question. Does magnetic therapy work? I have a friend who has a magnetic bracelet, and she says she feels something different, neither positive or negative, get it? When she doesn't wear it, but cannot explain why. As a licensed massage therapist, I've researched magnetics for treating the body and didn't find much evidence if, how, or why magnetics work on the body. Can you give me your insight, please? And thanks for your ever-so-popular jocularity, infinite wisdom, and vast knowledge."
I love it. I love it. Jocularity. How often do you get a chance to use that in a sentence, first of all? The grammar police would be so excited by the fact that jocularity was used correctly. Infinite wisdom and vast knowledge? Come on. Come on, Tom. I mean, that's like a 10. I mean, that's
well,
that's wonderful.
You deserve
I'm a doctor.
All of those,
that's
I believe.
Right. Magnetic stuff. There is no science behind it at all. When did it start? Probably in around the 1860s. It was extremely popular in the 1860s.
Oh, really?
1860s, 1880s. They thought that magnets really worked. That's about the time the copper bracelets for arthritis really hit the scene. Magnetic therapy. There were magnets under the bed, magnets all around the house, because they were basically producing more and more magnets. Then it fell out of use. Why? Because there is no use for it. There's no evidence that it works.
Yeah.
And then it fell out of use probably until about maybe 10 or 20 years ago, 100 years later, magnets started coming into use.
Yeah.
Now, people who put them under their bed often say, I no longer have backaches. I no longer have leg cramps.
Yeah.
I no longer have restless legs. Do I care? Of course I do. I think it's great that they got rid of all their symptoms with magnets.
But you don't think the magnets
do. I don't think the magnets do anything. On the other hand, we will have people who will write in and say, wait a minute, I use magnets.
Yeah.
I just paid five. I have people. There are people who paid $500 to $1,000. We're not talking about little Woolworths magnets or magnets, you know, from Walmart. We're talking about magnets that cost thousands, sometimes cost thousands of dollars under the bed. And frankly, I just don't think they work because there is no science behind it.
You don't think people were healthier in the 1860s? Because of magnets?
You know what? I think some people have a magnetic personality, and that's about as far as it goes.
Have a myth or a potentially polarizing question for Zorba? Just send it along in an email, too.
Zorba at WPR.org.
Back to the phones we go now, Zorba. Let's welcome a listener in Norman, Oklahoma now. Hi.
Hi. The question that I had was related to something that started happening about 8 months, maybe 10 months ago. I had a very sudden change in sense of taste and what I understood from sense of smell.
Mm-hmm.
Things that used to taste good to me, chocolate, very sad, tastes awful now. It's mainly been sort of a negative downturn, but certain things... I can pick up ammonia smells very well now for some reason. And I wondered if that's something to be worried about or if it's something that can be like just a consequence of getting older.
Ear, nose, or throat problems, allergies, problems that you have with your nose, congestion, post-nasal drip, anything like that?
No. Actually, I had allergy testing several years ago, mm-hmm. and it indicated no allergies.
Okay, no allergies, nothing, no stuffiness in terms of that. Head injuries that you've had in the past or present?
An ill-advised slip and slide incident when I was 18, but no, it's been quite a while.
It's been quite a while since you've been 18. An ill-advised slip and slide. I've got the whole image right there. I remember slip and slides. I'd never do it now. Now it would be slip and crash. You know, as soon as you would go down there. One of the things I would treat it, and I don't know what caused it. I don't think that's clear at all, is I would try to increase the ability to smell within the nose by using a steroid nasal inhaler, Flonase, 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 F as in Frank, comes in a generic, which is why I use it, two puffs in the morning, two puffs in the evening in each nostril for a week. See what happens. That might open things up and reduce any inflammation that's causing it, because your sense of taste actually comes from your sense of smell. And when you put the Flonase in your nostril, you want to suck it sort of into the back of the nostril. And if that works, at the end of a week, I then do one puff twice a day for a week, and then I would do one puff daily for a week. So you're on it for 3 weeks total, and then I'd quit. But what I would do is open up sort of that in the back of the nose. The other option, if you don't want to get that from your doctor right away, is to get a neti pot and use a saline wash in the back of your nose. Because that may be where this is. We don't always find the answer to the change in smell, but often it's inflammation in the back of the nose.
Okay.
So I try that. Okay. Good luck. Use the Flonase and see if that works.
Thank you very much.
Yep. You're welcome.
Appreciate the call. Thank you. And before we head out today, Zorba, we recently received this email from a listener named Brendan, who seems to have the same taste in cars as you. He writes, "Dear Tom and Zorba, I was recently in the parking lot outside my work in Madison and found myself admiring a Mazda Miata in a gorgeous sea blue teal color. I'd never seen a Miata in this color before and was thinking I'd love to ask the owner if this was a factory or a custom color. I had one foot in the door at work when I heard a familiar voice from across the parking lot and realized it sounded just like Zorba. Lo and behold, the voice was getting into the Miata and chatting with another passerby. Zorba, if that was you, is that paint job factory or custom? Either way, I love the show."
Well, it is 1959 GM turquoise. That's exactly what it is. It is the color of the car that I learned to drive on. It was a car that I had that I just loved. And yes, I've had this Miata since 1982. Mm-hmm. It was initially red, little red sports car. Then it became dark blue in my other days. And then I recently had it done in this beautiful turquoise. And you know what? It is so much fun to drive. It has go-kart maneuverability because it's about as peppy as a go-kart.
You're young again.
I love it.
If you have a story to share, post it to our Facebook page or send it along in an email to
Zorba@WPR.org. And if you come to our Facebook page, you will see a photo of my car.
See you next week, Zorba.
Stay well, Tom.
If you missed anything during the show or just want to download our show podcast, visit us on the web
at ZorbaPastor.org or through Facebook.
And don't forget, you can call us anytime at 800-462-7413. Zorba Pastor on Your Health is a production of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's not intended as a medical diagnosis, so please do check with your doc. Our executive producer is Carl Christensen, and our technical director is Brad Colburn. Our theme music is by Leo and Ben Sidran. For Zorba Pastor, I'm Tom Clark, expecting your company on the next Zorba Pastor on Your Health.
Copies of today's show are available through the radio store at 800-747-7444, ESCRA program number 0906Z. More information on Zorba, his clinic, and healthy living, including heart-healthy recipes, podcasts, and show archives, is available online at zorbapastor.org.
RI, Public Radio International.